Hi, everyone.
Welcome back to Too Niche. I'm Elizabeth.
I'm Lara.
This is the show where we pick a topic and we haul it.
We haul it until we can simply no longer haul. And today, because we are in our peasant era, according to previous episodes of Too Niche, we thought that we should honor our evil overlords, the billionaires, by doing a haul of messy billionaires.
Okay, first, really quickly, we need to obviously check in with the most polarizing show of the summer, The Idol.
I'm now in an awkward place of tripling down on my fandom for this show, and I've decided it's the hill I'm gonna die on, that it's not, like, great, it's passable to good. Like, it's mid to good for me personally.
I love that you had that Sunday night viewing experience, because I was not enjoying myself at all. But you were right. I think she, like, triumphs in the end and, like, comes correct, because we see that she does sort of have her best interest at heart.
I think Jocelyn has masterminded this whole thing for her own inspiration and to break out of the chains of her label and their expectations. So I think that Jocelyn did not want to do Freak Bitch, the single. So she purposefully botched it. And
she purposely did an orgasm remix.
Yeah. And that was a test, but then this other girl getting the single instead, like, is part of her master plan or something.
Okay.
And I also think that, like, she's just using Tedros.
I think you're right about that. I just think the show is bad. It's badly executed. It isn't fun to watch. But I'm, like, here for the topic. I could do that shit all day long. I just didn't think it was good at all. And I wasn't even, as I said last week, I don't think it's going to age to the point of, it's like, it wasn't good at the time, but then it got camp. It's not either of those things.
It might be kind of camp, though.
I would love to be wrong about it. But I will say, the thing that I couldn't handle, and I texted you about this, is these grown men, the way they were clutching their glass bongs. No, I can't.
But I think that's the camp element, is that it's just trying to be like, this is what it's like. Like, we get, like, Mike Dean, the producer. He comes over, he's bong in hand, does not even put his bong down while driving. This man does not drink iced coffees. His bong goes in the cup holder.
I can't. I mean, that part was hilarious to me, but I don't think it was intentionally hilarious.
I think it might be intentional.
Okay.
Well, I do have questions, though. I liked the, like, parallel, I guess the comparison of, like, whatever the label is doing with Jenny is, like, not so different from, like, what Tedros is being perceived as doing with Jocelyn.
Here was also the other thing, that just, like, the whole setup with, like, all these super talented people, I felt like I was watching some, like, sexual version of the movie Fame, and I was like, this is not good. It's not even a good sexual version.
Yeah, it's not, like, it's not very hot. I'm also like, what is the truth about this person? Does it matter? Is she just gonna fuck over everyone in the end?
You were right that she is very darkly horny.
Yeah, she's a little horn dog.
But I read in Vulture today, they did an interview with the woman that plays her manager, and she was like, yeah, like, the script was pretty loose, and a lot of the this episode in particular was improvised and we sort of just like went with it. I was like, you don't say.
But she seems great. I'm tracking her character.
She's
throughout.
Stand out.
Yeah.
Love her. Love what she brought to the table. But they're like, we didn't really have a script. It shows.
They're kind of just like throwing things together a bit. But I also like the parallel, like the callback. And I feel like we're getting more of that where they say she's not a victim. She's a feminist. And then the like evil label lady goes, they're the same thing. And I was like, I think we're now seeing a lot of that play out. Like whenever Tedros basically fingers her in front of the entire room of people, I was like, whoa, you guys are crazy for this. But I feel like that's a commentary on that. Cause I think that she is not feeling sexually taken advantage of right. by him. I think that she's like, she's getting off on it and down to clown and kind of enjoys putting others in like uncomfortable situations.
So just to check in with the temperature of the two niche listener.
I saw.
We started we got a few questions on what this is. Instagram offers a broadcast channel where if you follow us, we can sort of like send you links. It like shows up in your DMs. We're still sort of figuring out like how we're going to use it. But for those of you who are there, it's a fun time. And we asked if this week's episode of The Idol was sheesh or niche. 65 said sheesh, 12 said niche. And I see that Laura was one of
the ones when that I said saw, niche. When I checked in on the poll, I was like, oh my God, 51 are saying sheesh. I'll be saying niche. I got to make my vote heard. Also, what's kind of mess about this season of The Idol is just the absolute proliferation of misinformation online about how many episodes there are in season one. It's basically like 50, like no one knows the truth.
Well, I think it was an original 6-episode order and then it got narrowed down to 5. I wonder why.
Someone texted me that their friend worked on The Idol and said it was like it was a complete overhaul and like Elizabeth Berkley and Anne Heche were supposed to be in it originally.
I did hear that Anne Heche was supposed to be in it. May she rest. Love her.
Yeah. And I'm like,
Elizabeth Berkley would have been major.
She would have been really good.
Fellow Detroit girl.
They should have had Sharon Stone in it too, honestly.
Yeah, but Sharon Stone is discerning.
What's going to happen? I think Idol predictions. I think that Jocelyn is gonna get what she wants and just like leave Tedros and all those other talented people in the dust.
I think they're gonna go by way of my favorite movie of all time, Fame the Musical, and there's gonna be a huge cafeteria dance scene with all the talented kids just all of a sudden busting out into an amazing choreographed number.
Do you think what's like going to happen to like Carl Guzman, her random boyfriend that got called into the mix?
I think that was like a one and done. I guarantee you that they're going to maybe touch 2 seconds on the fact that they took that picture of him with the girl in the bikini and then they're just going to throw it out.
But they're trying to like get revenge on him, right?
I think that was Tedros being jealous and he had them go get the picture so that then Jocelyn sees it and then she's upset and doesn't want to have anything to do with him. But I guarantee you it's not going to be fleshed out enough. If
was he the guy that came on her face or was that just like a different person?
We don't know. See, there's so many
there's a lot of like loose ends not tied up.
That's what happens.
Where's her publicist?
Improv.
Remember when Dan Levy was her publicist?
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm excited.
That
to
was
see
great.
Him.
Yeah. The Idol.
I laughed out loud when Hari Neff, the Vanity Fair interviewer, was like, said something like asked such like an intrusive question about her mother's death, where I was like, I feel like no one would ask
that. Better help session.
Yeah. I was like, whoa, that came out of nowhere.
I also was happy they got us back to Hari because
they dangled Hari and then took Hari away.
I hope, in all seriousness, I would love it if it ends with this Vanity Fair piece like blowing the lid out of who knows what, and it's like this epic article. I don't think it's going to be that.
I just want Jocelyn to come out on top. I can't have it end with her being like devastated right. or sad.
Same.
That's because also hope. The misinformation that it's canceled, it's not officially canceled.
Right. So there we go.
Idle Hive. You must vote.
Of one.
Idle Hive of 12. I see you. And together we stand strong in our mild appreciation for this show.
Okay, so messy billionaires. Obviously, the billionaire of it all has been quite the topic of the conversation the past week or so due to not only the submarines, but the billionaires are fighting.
Apparently, Mark Zuckerberg and Elon Musk are threatening to get into a cage match competition, a UFC cage match
and
fight.
It's going to be a charity fight. And this all stemmed from Mark Zuckerberg saying that he could run Twitter better. Was that the crux of this?
I guess he said he could create a better Twitter. And he then Elon could. Musk was like, fight me, bro. And then Zuck was like, drop the Addy. And like, it spiraled from there. But I'm truly like, we need to stop giving men money, because in all of the research that I've done, which is a pretty surface level Google and reading some Wikipedias, it seems like the messiest billionaires, or just like billionaires, care about fighting, flying, and fucking.
Yeah, there's also, yeah, and like space exploration.
Mm-hmm. Or like deep sea exploration. Mm-hmm. Women billionaires, I think, tend to be a little more philanthropic, but there's also less of them. And I'm over these men.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
At this point. And so we thought, why not highlight the ridiculousness?
Let's honor some messy ass billionaires. Also some messy ass female billionaires, because we want to be equal opportunity. We're feminists, obviously. You know what was shocking to me in all of this? Bald Daddy Bezos, not that messy.
He's not that messy. The only thing I really caught wind of recently for him is he's having hot yacht summer.
Yeah, he's living, laughing, loving, one yacht at a time with his hot fiance, Lauren Sanchez. But I can't fault him for just living his best life.
He's living his best life. He's on his HGH tip and looks fun.
Yeah, I think I've had my eye on Bald Daddy for a while now. I think just like I saw him on a trip to Italy when he was still, not like I was there. I just saw pictures of him on a trip to Italy when he was still with Mackenzie. And I was like, damn, he's really got something going on. And now he's become like extremely hot to me. And he seems to like have his shit together somewhat and seems to be kind of happy and not annoying.
Yeah, no, I'm into it. I just also can't get over like the conversation he probably had with his stylist being like, I'm going to Coachella. I need something for the desert.
There were fittings involved and then a choice was made.
This will be perfect.
And I do think he's veering a little bit into an aesthetic that I don't love. I kind of liked when he was more like normcore.
Regular, degular.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like still buff and bald, but more like Patagonia and less Balmain.
I love a Patagonia billionaire.
Yeah.
I want like all of the mountaineering brands on them and nothing past that personally.
I know. I want to go to like that Idaho conference they go to. I want to go like on like tech guru, like camping retreats and just like hobnob with billionaires wearing Patagons.
Something that was interesting to me with the discourse around, as soon as we heard like the price tag for how much the submarine cost, it was like we instantly dehumanized the people who experienced that tragedy. And it was like pretty dark and very representative, I think, of what happens in mainstream media nowadays and probably always. But I just was thinking about how there's like so much conversation around eat the rich, but then also an obsession around how the rich spend their money.
Yeah, because I think you are, for me, like I want to put myself in the shoes of like, if I had unlimited resources, how would I spend? How would I act? Where would I go? What would a day in my life look like? Like who would be in my posse? Like, and it's fun to fantasize about that. So then when you get these snippets of gossip or whatever about billionaires, it's like fun to know about them. Because I do think that part of being a billionaire is to protect yourself from having people know anything about you. So I think there's a reason that we think that Jeff Bezos isn't messy. It's because Bezos wants us to think he isn't messy. So I think whenever something slips out or the media decides to like sink their teeth into a specific billionaire or millionaire and like report endlessly on them, it like feeds the public's fascination.
Definitely. And I also understand the other side of that too, which is like there's so much poverty that the world experiences, that America experiences, that we see every day just outside our doors, that knowing the statistics of how much these people have in their bank accounts and how much it would take to remedy some of these ills in our society, it's upsetting to people. So I understand that too. But I also just think it's like so intense, the vitriol that people have towards people just because they are wealthy.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have that. I'm like, I respect it and invite me on your yacht.
No, I'm like, let's be friends. I also would like money. And I think like, it's just money is such a fascinating subject because it really lights people the fuck up, as it should, because it also is like really emotional for a lot of people. And like billionaires ignite like a really solid question of like, how much is enough? Like at what point are you like, oh, I have $1 billion. Like, I think whatever I make beyond this, like I probably don't need and I can just give to someone else. But like when you see someone that has like $230 billion, you're like, you can't even like spend all that money. Or do you spend all that money? Or do you even, are you like, does that mean they're liquid with that kind of money? Or it's just like, that's their entire net worth? Like, I guess it's like, at what point is enough enough? But if you were making, like, what would be like your enough is enough limit for money?
Well, I don't really want to put a number on it because why limit oneself?
True.
But I would say $700,000 statistically is a really good number to be at.
Is that like research has shown that people that have that net worth or have all their needs met and yep. can like do whatever they want outside of doing like a submarine dive to death?
Exactly.
Okay,
and yeah. then it gets into like problem territory after that.
Yeah, because I think we also have this concept that like money can buy you happiness. And I think what we're about to see from all these messy billionaires is that I don't think that many of them are having like happy and fulfilling lives. Like money can make your life a lot easier and it can like eliminate a lot of problems or give you more privilege or time. But just because you have billions of dollars doesn't mean that you're like a truly happy person who's like at peace and like feeling good on the day to day.
Correct. So we've got quite the list. So everyone,
buckle up.
Let's get to it.
Okay. First on the list, I think let's go Howard Hughes.
Great base starting line.
A classic billionaire. One of the first I think that I ever heard about growing up. He was a real Hollywood, like golden age Hollywood movie mogul, and then became an aviation superstar, then became kind of like a land magnate and just like made coin over coin in a variety of different areas.
And just to bring it into our sphere of the Bravoverse, who's the woman with the black eye? I'm spacing.
Raquel?
No. on Salt Lake City.
Heather.
Heather's former husband's family worked for Howard Hughes, and that's where they got their fortune.
Yes. And what I realized when I was reading is like somehow, because he bought a lot of land in Nevada, maybe, or somewhere along the line, the Mormon church got really into bed with Howard Hughes. And actually, when he died, like a last minute will popped up on the desk of like some high up like Mormon person's desk. And I think that will was eventually deemed by courts to be like completely falsified. But like he and the Mormon church, they were in cahoots.
So according to a psychological autopsy conducted on Hughes in the years after his 1976 death, Hughes was isolated and friendless as a child and increasingly became concerned about his own health as a man. So in childhood, Hughes's mother was petrified of polio and other germs and would closely monitor every aspect of his son's health. And the autopsy theorized that Hughes never grew past his mother's fear, even finding himself paralyzed for several months for no physical reason. So as an adult, his fear of germs grew worse and worse to the point where he spent the last two decades of his life a near complete recluse. He would stay alone in a dark hotel room with tissue boxes on his feet, convinced it was the only way to keep germs away. He would burn clothes if anyone nearby got sick, and he would force his staff to do things like remove and scrub away all remnants of food can labels, clean it again after, and then take great care to never let a sparkling clean can touch the bowl. This despite rarely bathing or brushing his teeth himself, as the autopsy revealed. So he didn't believe germs could come from him just from the outside. Classic billionaire.
Yeah, I'm like, truly, who hurt you? And it seems like it was a mommy issue.
Yeah.
He also had like crippling OCD, and he was in a near fatal plane crash that I think caused him to have like a lot of pain. And even I think he was suffering from like a pain of like anything touching his skin would be really painful, which is why he stopped brushing his teeth and hair. It's because he just like couldn't take the pain of that. But I feel like that's also probably psychosomatic after some like period of time. So he would like sit in his house and in hotel rooms just like completely nude and watch the same movie like 150 times. He really went through it, and it was sad because he was kind of a genius and like this passionate engineer. But I think, and he dated like, he was like a young hot thing for a while, dating all these movie stars. And I think eventually one of them said, like, I don't think he could truly love anything that didn't have a motor in it. So he was just very much like a lonely person who was obsessed with airplanes.
And because of that obsession, it like really moved the needle on aviation. So thank you, Howard Hughes.
Yeah. And he was like a passionate, like it's good to have a passion about something, but it's also like you've got to take care of your childhood demons lest you end up just like naked in the Beverly Hills Hotel with just tissues over your groin watching like Homeward Bound over and over and over and over.
Oh my gosh, I give Howard Hughes a B.
I give him kind of an A+ because he accomplished a lot and had many different eras and then really took a dark nosedive.
I'm moving it up to an A-.
Yeah.
Now that you've laid it out there so perfectly.
He's doing it all, plus like the Leonardo DiCaprio playing him. Like it's all, it's
strong
great.
Hollywood treatment.
Yeah. Good messiness factor.
Mm-hmm.
Let's pivot to Robert Durst.
Ooh. A little background. He was born in 1943 into a wealthy New York real estate family. And I think we all know about Mr. Durst because his first wife, Kathleen McCormick Durst, disappeared on January 31st, 1982. Her body was never found, and nobody was initially charged with this disappearance. Cut to 2000, when Robert Durst's close friend, Susan Berman, was found murdered in her Los Angeles home, and Durst was suspected of involvement in her death, which was believed to be linked to his first wife's disappearance. Then we got the documentary treatment known as the Jinx documentary. The series delved into his life, alleged involvement in the crimes, and included a very notable, very memorable, I couldn't believe that this was 2015 because this feels so just like fresh in my brain, the notable audio recording where Durst seemingly admits to these killings, and he was arrested and acquitted of murder charges but convicted of tampering with evidence and jumping bail. And then he ended up in jail and died there.
So in 2001, he was arrested for another murder, and that's when he was like acquitted and then charged with the tampering of evidence and jumping bail. But he had claimed during that murder that like it was actually like a self-defense murder, but no one would really believe him because like
he fully dismembered the body.
Yeah. And also he was like, well, there's like whispers of me being involved in these other murders, which I totally swear I'm not. But like, I just feel like you're not going to trust me because you think that I'm a murderer, because low key, I'm very much a murderer.
I think the messiness for me really is highlighted in agreeing to do a sit down documentary. And then what I remember most about the doc is how he was like fully twitching the whole time as he was talking to the camera.
Yeah. The messiness comes in, and this actually goes into more scariness. Like whenever an obviously guilty person agrees to go on camera when it's like, this could be the thing, like this could be the nail in your coffin, but you're going to do it anyways because you want attention. That to me goes from messy to like, you're scaring me.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like lots of like sociopath or like psychotic people, or even like Real Housewives who are criminals, tend to do this, and they like see stars in their eyes instead of being like, I'm going to stay out of the public eye. Like if I committed a bunch of crimes and didn't want anyone to know about them, I wouldn't be...
Mic off, I think.
Yeah, I'd be going into hiding, just trying to be like below everyone's radar.
Yeah, you would, front and center. You would Ghislaine Maxwell it.
Yeah, to New Hampshire I flee.
I give Robert Durst a D purely because... No, I'm scared.
Yeah.
He classic case of rich white man being able to avoid
just like get out
punishment.
Of everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For a very long time when everything was stacking towards the fact that he did it.
It's not fun. It's not salacious. It's not cute. Leo's not playing you.
Definitely not.
So that's a D as well.
I think we need to bring in some feminine energy to the mix.
Okay.
With Jocelyn Wildenstein. Wildenstein? Wildenstein?
Jocelyn Wildenstein. She's one of my favorite larger-than-life people alive today. For those of you who don't know her, or you think you don't know her, you probably do, because she's referred to as the cat lady because she's had so much plastic surgery. She kind of has like feline-esque features, but she's an icon to me because of the plastic surgery and because she made her billions getting divorced from her husband.
Which is like a classic route to billionaireism.
Mm-hmm.
So I've learned in this research.
Yeah. So she married this guy named Alec Wildenstein, who is from like a very notable, wealthy art family, who, interestingly enough, like if you have time for some Vanity Fair article deep dives, they published a really interesting story about that family that basically claims that part of their wealth was generated from I think like getting artworks that were stolen during World War II by the Nazis and like just getting their hands on these like Nazi stolen artworks and then selling them.
Like at auction?
Yeah, I think so. Like it was like really shady. So like instead of these works going back to like the families or places that they were stolen from, it was like they were just kind of shuffled to this family and then... And they had a hand in something, and then that's how they made their wealth. So when that's the case, I'm doubly happy that Jocelyn got her settlement. So she was married to this guy, Alec Wildenstein, and then I guess they had like an extremely messy divorce, and she walked in on him with a 19-year-old Russian model, and he threatened Jocelyn with a gun, and then he went to jail. Then during the divorce, the judge stipulated that she was not allowed to use any alimony payments for plastic surgery. And then at one point in time, they were both, he was trying to kick her out of their shared house. And there was like a lot of drama about like who got to keep the house. And like, it was just an ongoing fight over how is Jocelyn going to be set up to live her life to the lifestyle she's accustomed. And so she was eventually awarded, I think it was like $2.5 billion.
And $100 million each year for the following 13 years.
I don't love a judge telling her what to do with her alimony payments.
That's interesting. That's kind of like a read.
Yeah. I think also just the amount of press and like bad press that she got over that time was probably like fed out by the billionaire family from which she was divorcing.
I really am in deep love with how she yassifies her photos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's, I like that she's active on socials.
I think that this inspired a storyline on Nip Tuck. Do you remember the lady that wanted to look like a cat?
That does ring a bell. Yeah, people were like wondering with Jocelyn, like, does she want to look like that because she loves cats, or does she want to look like that because her husband, Alec, loves that look? Mm-hmm. But she's just been like such a force from the day she came on the scene.
I'm giving her an A.
Yeah, I give her an A+. She was also, to take it back to like when we hauled celebrity marriages and really celebrated Liza Minnelli's tumultuous relationship with David Guest. Jocelyn was in a scandal where she like attacked her, I think he was her boyfriend, he might still be her boyfriend, Lloyd Klein. He's like a fashion designer, and they had like a messy night, and she I think was charged with maybe like battery or something of him. But then they got back together and they're still together to this day. So yeah, Jocelyn gets an A+. Keep slaying, queen.
Yeah. How about Miss Leona Helmsley?
Leona Helmsley was a real estate magnate / hotelier, dubbed the Queen of Mean. I remember reading about her a lot when I was like first getting into gossip blogs, like in 2005 through 2007 or 8. D-Listed would always write about her. And honestly, justice for her, because she probably wasn't doing anything that different mean-wise from whatever men do who are in her same position. She and her husband they had like a real estate empire that included the Empire State Building and like, I think like some Madison Avenue or Park Avenue building, and then like a hotel, like a couple hotels in New York. And she did time in prison for tax evasion and conspiracy to defraud the United States. Go off. Mail fraud, filing false corporate and partnership tax returns. And she did, I think, 21 months in jail total.
And she actually passed away in 2007.
Mm-hmm. She made headlines because she left pretty much the bulk of her estate to her trust that was created with her former husband. But then she left separate instructions. Basically, she said, like, I'm leaving behind all my money and I want it to only benefit dogs because those are the only things I care about. And then she left her own Maltese dog, Trouble, $12 million in a trust fund. And then it was reduced by the courts to $2 million, which is rude to take away just this innocent dog's trust fund.
That's upsetting.
But Trouble ended up having a caretaker that was paid a salary of $60,000 a year to care for him. And there was like...
very Chopet energy. Mm-hmm. I'm really fascinated by rich pets. That's another haul because there's a lot of them.
There's a lot of them. Trouble was designated $100,000 a year for full-time security, $8,000 for grooming, and $1,200 for food, which doesn't seem like that much for food.
No.
A year?
Wow.
Trouble wasn't on a just food for dogs diet, I'll tell you that right now. Leona also said that she wanted Trouble, when Trouble died, to be buried with her in her mausoleum, which cost, I think, like a cool $1.8 million. And New York state law prohibits the interment of pets in human cemeteries, so the dog was cremated.
What an interesting law.
I know. If you love a dog, if you love your dog and want it to end up with you post-mortem, then you should aim to be buried somewhere else. Or I guess cremated.
Together.
Or you're cremated and then your dog is cremated. Then your ashes are combined and then you're flung into the ocean.
I don't want to be thrown into the ocean, but I want to be mixed, obviously.
Yeah. I'd like to be like, I think mixed up and then made into like thrown under like a tree or something like that. Or like made into like fertilizer or something. Yeah. For like a special tree.
The death industry, big trend to watch. Also, I learned on Keeping Up that you could also become a diamond.
Oh, that intrigues me. But I then wouldn't want to be like lost.
No, I would need to be on a display with like a special lighting system.
Yeah.
That's just sort of like, here she is.
Yeah, I don't think I could be like, I don't want to be someone's ring.
Or in a drawer.
No, not in a drawer. Like, I don't want to be in any position where I could fall into the wrong hands and then someone's just like carrying me around or pawning me.
People are selling you off.
Yeah, I don't want that. But I would like, I don't know if I'm comfortable being like in those tree pods, you know, those like human pods. That's nice. But for some reason, it freaks me out to think of myself as like just fetal position in a pod. I'm really comfortable being burned.
I'm into the mixed with the dog.
I'm burn, mix me, and then plant a beautiful tree. Don't let that tree die.
Like a beautiful fruit tree.
Yeah. And then you can have like a little bit whenever, like a lemon, being a lemon tree would be really nice.
Citrus.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I think we worked this out.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Miss Helmsley gets a B plus. I think you're just like, if you're a female on this list for me, I'm sorry, you're moving to the top of the grade system.
Yeah, I'm going to give her an A minus because I like her whole vibe and she went to prison. So that's cool.
She's lived life.
And I guess like during the time that she went to prison, people were saying, or when she was on trial, people were saying like her icy attitude, like the jurors just didn't like her. And I was like, that's misogyny.
Classic.
And one of her cleaning ladies testified to hearing Leona saying like, the rich people aren't supposed to pay taxes. Only little people pay taxes. And I was like, name one other billionaire that hasn't said that. Like, I think she's getting crucified and I don't stand for it. Mm-mm. So she gets an A minus from me.
Okay, maybe I'm at A minus as well.
Okay, love
I'm being that. I'm open to being swayed by my initial hit.
Ah. Who do we do?
Who's good from here? Should we do Rupert Murdoch?
Let's do Rupert.
Okay. So Rupert was born in 1931. He's an Australian-born American businessman, media proprietor, and investor. Over the years, a lot of messy things, I think, come up when you're media forward.
Mm-hmm.
But what I would like to highlight is the phone hacking scandal that emerged in 2005, which was revealed that journalists at the British tabloid newspaper News of the World, which was owned by Rupert Murdoch's News International, had been involved in phone hacking. So they had illegally accessed voicemail messages from celebrities, politicians, members of the royal family, and even crime victims, and then used the information that they got from hacking the voicemails to print headlines.
Sick.
It's pretty messy. And ended up highlighting the unethical practices employed by a lot of journalists, and it raised a broader conversation around integrity and accountability in the media.
So like the Murdoch family is basically the basis of the succession family. Like they're loosely based on the Murdoch family and the three children's battles for who will succeed Rupert. And this phone hacking scandal happened, I think, under his son James's tenure as like the head of whatever division that was. And James was basically had been bumped up to being like the first in line, like the heir apparent. And then this phone hacking scandal happened and he was quickly like bumped off again.
Whoa.
And Vanity Fair covers a lot of like Murdoch comings and goings. So they always have like a really good tea on like the succession battles between the kids and like their scandals. And then like they covered Wendy Dang, Rupert's like second wife, I want to say.
I'm a Dang head.
I'm Dang gang for sure.
They split?
They are long split.
They're long split. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm just catching up to my Murdoch trivia. And then he was dating Jerry Hall for a moment.
He was married to Jerry Hall, but then like abruptly divorced her and is now with some other rando. Wow. He's dating well into his late 90s. Yeah.
I also like that Wendy Dang had a 2-year affair with a 21-year-old Hungarian model named Bertold Zehorhan.
Yeah.
That's just nice. I think that's just a nice consolation prize after your dealing with an elder for so long.
Mm-hmm.
So good for her.
I think that also he like leaves women very quickly. Like it's like all of a sudden you're just kicked to the curb and you're like, what?
That's a money thing.
That's the Rupert way.
Yeah. Okay. Rupert Murdoch, specifically the phone hacking revelation scandal, I like this one. I'm going to give it a B plus.
Yeah, I'm going to give him like a B plus as well, because I do like tabloid gossip. I like that the whole family has inspired like an entertainment juggernaut. I do think that his come up to like, and like his methods of building his business were really fascinating. Like how he acquired newspapers and like built a media empire is really fascinating. And the fact that he's still like at it after all these years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go get him, kid.
Mm-hmm. Remember when he was like at a hearing for something and someone tried to throw a pie at him and Wendy Dang like went full like attack mode?
I missed.
That was like a classic moment.
A classic Murdoch moment. Mems.
Yeah, she protected him from getting like pied during a hearing.
Wow, she really went for her man there.
Yeah, Wendy sprang into action and went like full Kristen Doty beat down on the person trying to pie her man. So
Wendy was like, suck a dick.
Mm-hmm. I love to see that. And, you know, yes, these people started Fox News, but who's more guilty, the people that start it or the people that watch it?
Oh, just something to think about. Just leave it at that.
Yeah. Okay, so I think we have to go back to the Hearst family, William Randolph Hearst, because he's kind of the grandfather of tabloid journalism. So he started his own media empire, inherited his father's newspaper, the San Francisco Examiner, and then like gutted it and like rebooted it. And one of the things he was famous for was like yellow journalism, which was like salacious reporting and like unethical practices in journalism. And Citizen Kane was based off of his life. So like that, the main character, or Orson Welles' character in that movie, is like based off of Willie. And he was married till death to his wife Millicent, but carried on an affair pretty much the entire time with Marion Davis, who was like one of the leading silent film movie stars of that era, and like helped her career because he'd always like have her be portrayed positively in all his newspapers, and basically like set her up for life. And like the big agreement between him and his wife was like they would be married to the public eye, and he as long as he remained married to her and supported her, he could like live with this other woman and like essentially have like a woman on the side.
Scandalous.
I know. Wow. And then he pretty much lost it all in the Great Depression, and then like kind of bounced back during World War II, but never like had it as good as his like glory days.
Wow.
But then years later, it's kind of like a cursed, I like the cursed billionaire families.
Yeah.
Where there's like lineage and like crazy shit happens. So Patricia Hearst, aka Patty Hearst, was his granddaughter who was kidnapped by like a left-wing group in the 1970s and then radicalized and started committing all these crimes with them. And it was like a big, huge scandal. She had Stockholm syndrome. So she like became sympathetic to her captors and then would go out and like commit crimes with them. And then finally she was arrested and put on trial and then sentenced to prison. But obviously she's from an incredibly wealthy family, so her sentence was commuted and then Bill Clinton like pardoned her later.
I kind of see where she might have like gotten on board with her captors, because when they initially kidnapped her, the demand was for distribution of food to the needy. Could kind of see a world where she'd be like, okay, like,
yeah,
I can get behind those terms.
So I'm unclear though, like, did they say like to her family, like, you need to distribute food to the needy? And her family's like, no, fuck off.
Yeah, they wanted two members of the SLA who had been arrested. They wanted them to be released. And then also they wanted money to go towards this people in need program, which was to help feed the needy.
Was that their program that they started?
I hope so.
I'm really obsessed with it, and we'll get into the Getty family, but it was like the 1970s were a time when heirs and heiresses would be kidnapped, and then the kidnappers would go to their families and be like, do this to get them back. And the families were like, no, I don't think so. And like, just leave these kids for dead.
It's a big kidnapping era.
And a big family is being like, no way, Jose, am I going to pay anything to you? And like, the cards will fall where they may. What's that about? That parents these days are not like that.
No, it's the opposite.
It's depression era parents,
yeah,
that are beyond boomers, whatever that generation was called, where it was like, we simply shan't be engaging. Those were the boomers' parents, I guess.
Yeah. Because
wouldn't that be like boomer? God, no wonder boomers are like fucked up.
Struggling.
And then millennials. got the real.
Here we are.
We blame it. It all goes back to the Great Depression.
Yeah. I feel like now some sort of kidnapping scenario, there would be like TikTok involved. TikTok live.
Yeah.
And it would play out in real time. Everybody would be riveted. There'd be discourse around the kidnappers, and we would blame the person who got kidnapped for being rich.
There hasn't been a good kidnapping in a long time.
Well, we had the Kim heist.
True, but that was more of a robbery, I would say.
True.
Like,
that is actually a classic robbery, but it had a heist level planning.
Yeah, but like a true blue kidnapping.
With like a ransom like note.
And I'm talking like wealthy people kidnapping. There just hasn't been one of those. So yeah. I'm feeling like if billionaires wanted to, I think maybe win some more favor and get people to be like a little bit less eat the rich, one of them should stage a faux kidnapping.
Would not be the worst idea.
Yeah. Just a thought.
Free ideas.
Yeah. I give Hearst fam. Oh, and then there's the Hearst Castle. Have you been there?
No.
It's in San Simeon, California, which is like kind of by San Luis Obispo. William Randolph Hearst inherited all this land and then decided to build just like a massive mansion castle. And he would have these like fabulous parties there and like invite celebrities to hang out. And it's like still standing to this day, and you can go take tours, and it's really like stunning.
Oh.
Yeah, it's like has like an indoor pool that's all like mosaic tiles, like an outdoor pool and like grand ballrooms and hallways and zebras on the property because he had like zebras.
Oh, flown. Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's like a real like rich person. I like it when they go like kooky, like I'm going to build the home of my dreams.
But then do they give it then as like a charity donation to allow commoners to come in and...
I think when like Amanda Hearst or whatever the daughter is that got married to that like television presenter,
oh, the guy who used to host Singled Out,
yeah, I think that she got to, I think that house is still in the family, so then she got to like use it for like a, like I want to say like a bachelorette weekend or a wedding weekend, and like had friends over to like swim and hang out there.
Mazel
so
tub.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
For them.
It's a happy ending.
Yeah. I give them, theirs seems like more romantic, and I tend to like more like media empire wealth than mm-hmm. I do like oil and energy wealth.
Me too.
I think you're hurting less people media empire wealth.
Yeah, I think media empire wealth, you're just riding the wave of the Industrial Revolution and like everything that came with it, like the newspapers and
yeah,
growth.
And you might be spreading misinformation, but c'est la vie, I suppose.
Hey.
They found us really in a charitable mood this Sunday. We're basically like riding hard for these like billionaire families. Whatever.
Someone needs to.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they're getting
victims in all of
this.
Yeah,
they're getting so much hate lately. Someone needs to counterpoint.
Let's get into the Getty family.
Okay, so John Paul Getty was infamously recognized for refusing to pay his grandson's ransom of $17 million after the grandson was kidnapped by individuals linked to the Italian mafia. After a newspaper received John Paul Getty III's severed ear in the mail, Getty negotiated a ransom of $2.2 million that led to his grandson's release 5 months after being captured. That is a commitment to a kidnapping.
Yeah, he basically was like, nope, and then let his grandson be tortured for months. And then the grandson tragically later, like he never recovered. He always like struggled with drugs and alcohol, and I think eventually died of like struggles related to drug abuse or complications from drug abuse.
And the Getty family sort of has this like history of drama and messiness.
Yeah, like just like a dark cloud of, I think that's more, I associate it more with like substance abuse or just like darkness mm-hmm. and greed.
Okay, so their wealth originated from the oil industry. I'm not sure if we had stated that up at the top. And particularly the development of the Getty Oil Company. The Getty Museum, which if you're in Los Angeles, LA City Guide, you gotta go. It's the family's philanthropic legacy that is closely tied to the arts. You can take like a monorail up, and that was a full tax write-off donation to Los Angeles.
Yeah.
I love whoever figured out like how did those workarounds, A+.
Mm-hmm.
This like beautiful destination with incredible exhibits and an amazing art collection and sprawling beautiful views, and you don't have to pay taxes basically.
Yeah. As a result, yeah, it's like so, oh my god, this thing is so expensive, and it's like so nice for everyone that now I don't have to pay
genius
taxes. Yeah, it's funny how that works out.
Yeah.
J. Paul Getty worked in the oil fields of Oklahoma along with his father, George Getty. When George died, he left J. Paul with $500,000 and a projection that he would destroy the family business. And then J. Paul Getty negotiated a 30-year-old concession in the neutral zone between Saudi Arabia and Kuwait. And then basically they drilled and got like Middle Eastern oil. Seems like a lot of infighting with them and addictions.
Classic.
Yeah. I don't love it. But now I'm realizing, I'm like, okay, well, I'm sure that they have some sort of link to Iraq war. I'm sure there's some Venn diagram. I can't get into it now. We're simply podcasters, so we won't be researching. But my gut is telling me that there's a link. Then you have like Murdoch, Fox News, which I think does have a link to like the election and like the current state of political unrest in the United States. So I'm like, okay, maybe media billionaires aren't so great after all.
Counterpoint.
I'm like, hoteliers, seemingly innocuous, yet we have Trump, who was also like kind of a hotelier, like real estate magnate.
But was Trump ever in the billionaire status?
I think he claimed to be, or was like reported as one.
I would like to see those numbers.
Yeah.
Just quickly on the Getty front, it was the younger son of John Paul Getty Jr., Sir Mark Harris Getty, who co-founded Getty Images.
Wow. Smart.
Just like a good fact to have for us all.
I'm still racking my brain for like just like a cool, good billionaire.
Yeah.
Doing cool, good things. But it's hard. Well,
you know, I think the school of thought would be that in order to become a billionaire, it's impossible to be a good person. I don't know if I agree with that statement, but I think that that is like the blanket thought. Like, well, you probably have to like fuck a lot of things up to get to that status.
Yeah, because like, does anyone actually need $1 billion?
No, hence the eat the rich.
Yeah.
Ideology.
Like, you could be chill. You could just stop at like 100 mil. And be like, I feel pretty good about this.
Right.
You have like a variety of houses or just like wealth that will just continue if you play your cards right. Like, what makes someone go further?
It's such a layered and triggering conversation because, as mentioned up at the top, just like how much of a disparity of wealth there is in the world and like how much sickness and lack of resources and like how that could all be evened out. So it's just so easy. Like, the more I think about it, the more it's like so easy to just feel like high levels of side eye towards all of them.
And anger.
Yeah.
Because it's like Elon Musk, for example, I'm like, couldn't you just take like the remaining, like take a billion for yourself and then the remaining like 238 billion go fix problems in like right. several countries. When I think about like, oh, if I were a billionaire, like what would I do with my life and my time? It's like, I wouldn't buy Twitter. I'll tell you that.
Right. Definitely
I wouldn't
not.
Go in a submarine.
I would go the Mackenzie Scott way.
Yeah.
Mackenzie Scott was married to Jeff Bezos. And in her divorce of Jeff Bezos, so Scott was named the world's richest woman by December 2020 when her net worth was estimated at $62 billion.
I guess once you do get $1 billion, whatever interest you have, like your money is just making money. Like you just reach a point where it's like your money doesn't stop making money.
Mm-hmm. And she also pledged to
give away most of
her wealth.
Yeah.
I stan.
That's what you would need to do. Like really, you don't need to, I guess if you just really want to have $1 billion and you have 62 billion, like if I had that, I'd be like, okay, I just want to keep a bill. Like just for me, it's just my thing. That's what I'm going to do. Don't judge. But the other 62 billion, yeah, I'd be like, let's find great places to help out and just like help people.
Also, she's helping people and also staying quiet, which is what I would recommend for Elon.
Yeah, I think what's interesting now is like with these billionaires that are more in the public eye is like they have more of a direct line to the public than ever before. So then you actually are like, oh, you're not that respectable. Like you're a clown pretty much.
Right. And that's why if I was in that position, I would, no one would know what I'd be up to. My happenings would be on lock.
I would continue to podcast because it's fun.
Of course.
And then I would just be like traveling all over the world, probably with like friend, like any given friends at any time would be like, you want to come here? You want to come here? It's like all expenses paid, just like adventures 24/7 and like podcast all the way through it. And then have like a ton of pugs, maybe even breed pugs.
I'd have so many mini poodles. I'd have actually moved into the toy realm of poodles.
Yeah, I would be, Tony would be cloned immediately. That would be done.
First order of business.
First order of business is getting like mini Tony embryos and like DNA on ice ASAP. And then it would be just like lots of traveling.
Cashmere interior plane.
Oh, full cashmere interior plane. I would be traveling on a private jet and having a yacht. Sorry, climate change, but like take it up with the ones that came before me. A lot of shopping and yeah, like a lot of charity giving away. Like I'd just be like, okay, here's what I need like to feel safe. Like if I look at my bank account and then it has this number, like it has just $1 billion in the bank account and checking or savings, then I feel safe. And anything that's over that will just give away to other people.
That's
and like
beautiful.
Offset everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because right, you don't need more than that.
No.
Also, it seems kind of like a lot of work to have a ton of different houses.
Yeah.
Like I'd rather just, we'd be staying in hotels. Maybe own a hotel and start like a super luxury hotel.
Trying to think of what other business I would get into if I had all the capital.
Yeah.
See, I kind of come from the school of thought that there's too many businesses and there's too many things. So I think like scaling down, I would probably just be doing exactly what I'm doing, is helping people siphon through what's worth their time and what isn't.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd be doing it from the sky.
Would you be doing it from like a floating orb outside of the Earth's atmosphere?
No, that I'm not there yet. That sounds scary. And that's like submarine territory.
Yeah, I have no urge to like go into space.
Mm-mm.
I don't want to go to the moon. I don't want to go to the bottom of the ocean, but I do want to go in first class or private travel only. And I'd like a yacht experience.
I get seasick, so I'm not like craving boat travel.
Mm-hmm.
But if you had a yacht, I'd invite myself on.
Yeah, you'd be invited.
Thanks.
Where do you think you would like lose yourself with like, what are like the pitfalls of money for you in terms of like, do you go astray?
I could see myself spending a lot of money on interior design and then 2 months later wanting to paint everything a different color and reupholster everything and start again. And I think that I would be in an endless cycle of that.
Yeah, of not feeling at peace with your surroundings.
Just like constantly wanting to shift the interior vibe of a space. Because I do that now. It would be a showroom where I would just constantly in and out.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see that becoming an issue.
Not for the people that were helping you.
Right? And then, you know, hiring different vendors and designers. And then it's just like helping the community.
Yeah, maybe you have an interior design side hustle. I think mine would be like adventure seeking or like just constantly on the move all the time. Mm-hmm. Like not, maybe not setting down like roots anywhere.
You'd be in Stad.
I just like to be, I like to be on the go.
Yeah.
And I can, and that can be fun, but it can also be really isolating. And then it's like, what if the people that were constant, like you can't trust people that can be constantly on the go with you all the time, because people do have to have their like own lives and
right
stuff.
The hangers on, you'd have to be just really solid in the people that you surround yourself with.
Yeah,
or else you go to Britney land.
It'd be Drake, no new friends probably.
Definitely.
Yeah,
definitely. I think we need to talk about Elizabeth Holmes.
Yeah,
a modern day
messy queen.
Yeah. So just to recap, Miss Holmes founded Theranos in 2003 with the vision of revolutionizing the healthcare industry by developing a portable blood testing device capable of conducting a wide range of tests just with just a few drops of blood. She claimed the technology would be faster, cheaper, and more accessible than a traditional blood testing method. And she basically vowed that this was going to change the entire testing industry. And the company faced scrutiny from journalists, medical professionals, and regulatory agencies, alleging that the technology did not live up to the claims made by Holmes. Investigations revealed that the majority of the tests were performed using traditional machines instead of the revolutionary technology she touted. So basically, at its peak, Theranos was valued at $9 billion. Dollars, making Holmes a billionaire and a prominent figure in the business world. Hello, Forbes magazine cover. However, in 2015, investigations by the Wall Street Journal exposed the issues of Theranos technology, leading to a downward spiral for the company. And in 2018, Holmes and the former Theranos president, Sonny Balwani, they were both charged with multiple counts of fraud. And now Miss Holmes is in prison with our girl, Jen Shah.
Yeah, so Miss Holmes, I go really back and forth.
Me too.
Like, lock her up or she did nothing wrong. It's hard to say.
I think she definitely did something wrong. Do I think that obviously when the wrongdoer is in a package of a young white blonde female, it just gets a different level of attention and like a higher scrutiny level than it would be if it were a man in the same position. Like, I honestly think if a guy did exactly what she did, it would get attention. Would it have a TV show? No,
it wouldn't be covered with the amount of like fervor that
exactly
people
like it
covered
like,
this story.
It would be like run of the mill.
Mm-hmm.
But with this, it just sort of caught everyone's attention, and it came in this package of like the changing of the voice and just sort of like the strung out Adderall vibe on the cover of with the hair and
the
just
turtlenecks,
like,
yeah, and eye makeup and the lipstick,
a whole scene.
Mm-hmm. But I do think she's kind of crazy.
Yes.
And I think that she just bought into, she got high on her own supply. And instead of just being like pivoting, which I think is like, you've got to know whenever something is tanking, how to just pivot, admit to yourself it's not working, pivot
quiet,
into
quit.
Something else and like figure it out is always better than like lying and yeah. then becoming like defrauding.
My people. Assumption is that she was in too deep and didn't know how to get out of it.
Yeah.
In a way that would salvage anything. And instead, she's in jail.
You know what? It's kind of like Scandoval in a way, because it's like, instead of just being like, I don't want to be in this relationship anymore, this isn't working for me, like, let's break up, or I am now breaking up, I'm done with this relationship. It was like, he cheated and lied and cheated and lied and cheated and lied and then got caught and then it blew up.
But then when he got caught, still was holding on to the lie.
And doubling down.
That was
even
the
worst.
I think that it would have all like landed a little bit differently and a little bit more in both him and Raquel's favor if they just would have like come clean at the top.
Because, and Lizzie Holmes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All three of them in the same club.
It's a similar pattern for sure.
Definitely one would think with the fervor in which people reacted and are reacting to Tom, you would think he pulled a Lizzie Holmes like full on and like defrauded Walgreens.
Truly, people are treating it as such.
Wild.
But this, I think, is like, yeah, billionaire or not, there's something about this like getting caught up in a cycle of lying and cheating and lying and cheating and then getting caught and being exposed that like not even a billionaire is immune from falling prey to that cycle.
It's, yeah, I give Elizabeth Holmes a C.
Same. I was going to say a C as well.
Because I'm just, I don't know. I get really anxious or like, I get really uncomfortable is a better word for it with like when the media can really just like take something and twist it to like a convenient narrative.
Yeah, I was really fascinated by the New York Times profile that came out like around the time that she was being sentenced.
Right. I forgot about that.
And
we did get some attempts at presenting her side and I don't think they did.
Oh, I don't think it landed.
That did not land.
No, and I'm a little bit like, I'm pretty judgy-wudgy about having two kids right before you're going to serve a 10-plus year prison sentence. Like, I think that's really like unethical and not conscious parenting. But I don't know.
It seemed like a effort.
I know.
To
a Hail Mary, yeah, to like sway the court's opinions or like a judge's opinion in sentencing, and then it like didn't pan out and I'm like, well, but I also don't know, I'm not in her shoes.
Exactly. But that would be brutal to be in her shoes. That's a tough one.
Yeah,
I always empathize with the underdog no matter what. It's a character flaw of mine. Like when I was a kid, I felt so bad for Tonya Harding. Being from Detroit, the Nancy Kerrigan thing happened at the Joe Louis Arena. And so everybody had like, I knew like all these skater girls from school were there when it happened. It was just like, it hit really close to home. And I remember just like always feeling really bad for Tonya. And when her skate was loose and she was like, I can't skate my shoelace. I was like, oh, she just can't catch a break. Like this poor girl, everyone's shitting on her. And like, and it turned out I was right. She had a really hard life and nobody, I felt like just like she got like a bad edit all the way around.
Yeah, that was kind of like, I guess, the first reality show type of dynamic that I was ever exposed to. Because I think I was probably in like second or third grade when that happened.
It was formative.
Yeah, and I remember just being like glued to the TV watching their performances and like seeing her like crumble under pressure and be like a sad sack about the loose skate. that was like the first kind of like, what is it, Schadenfreude or however the fuck you say it. That was like the first time I felt that in a way where I was like, I like this.
Let's make talking about it a career.
Yeah, or just being like, I like, women are just like more compelling than men, mm-hmm. I think, like, period.
Yeah.
So that's why whenever they're involved or embroiled in some sort of scandal, I think it has more legs because they are just like more physically attractive, more like mysterious. They contain lots of different layers and like the dynamics of like female relationships or like being in relationship with a female is like oftentimes more nuanced than like a man. Kind of many of them just are one note.
I had a professor in college say that a man's emotions are the original 12 Crayola box of crayons and a woman is 120. And I just feel like that's true.
Yeah.
And because of that complexity that comes with the female experience and how our brains are, it just automatically makes for a more compelling billionaire grift.
Totally. And then because of the complexity and like everyone's knowledge of that complexity, it makes for more of a witch hunt when someone mm-hmm. does something wrong. Cause you're like, oh, you must, there's like more to pick apart.
There's more mess.
There's way more mess to like mine rather than a man where you're like, well, you just chalk it up to like, he's this way or he's that way or he did that. Like, it's like not with a man, it seems more cut and dry. But with a woman, it's like their wheels are always spinning and like there's so much going on. Like, you just want to get down and wow. like, pick it apart.
I feel like we really uncovered something with this haul.
Me too. Justice for Lizzie Holmes. Justice for Leona Helmsley. Justice for Jocelyn Wildenstein. And honestly, justice for Jeff Bezos. He's just like living it up. He's building mermaid busts of his love
yacht
on his
girl
like
summer.
Pirate ships. I mean, that seems like a good use of his time.
Yeah. And his glow up.
Could he stand to pay Amazon workers more? Absolutely.
Yes. Okay, guys. What a haul. Just be sure to fill out the survey that we have in the show notes, and you'll be entered to win a ton of fun prizes. And we have a really banging haul for next week that I am personally so excited for.
Yeah, stay tuned for next week's haul. It's a timely haul.
It's a timely haul. It's a highly listener requested haul, and it's a haul that has been on my heart for quite some time.
And until then,
stay niche.
Bye.
Too Niche is created and hosted by Laura Marie Shanehals and me, Elizabeth Cott.
Today's episode was edited by AJ Mosley. If you love today's episode, please give us a 5-star A+ rating in Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcast audio. And be sure to subscribe so that you never miss an episode. And be sure to smash the follow on Instagram and TikTok at this_is_too_niche.
One of my favorite big ticket investment items is from Higher Dose. From infrared sauna blankets to PEMF mats, their science-backed tech helps you sweat and recharge and glow like never before. I am such a fan. I truly lie on my PEMF mat every night. I also love my sauna blanket. They are just incredible items. And because you're a Too Niche listener, you get 15% off your order with code NICHE15 at checkout. So head over to higherdose.com, use code NICHE15, and elevate your wellness routine today.